All right, welcome back to committee. The Transportation Conference Committee will come to order May 13th. And we have several items in fashion the way we've been conducting our meetings here the last several days is agreement and discussion on some items that were in the both House-only and Senate-only versions. So we will walk through several of those and have time for questions. And we'll just go back and forth here, Mr. Chair, if that's all right. And we can start in the eminent domain issue that was in the House only. While that was on sections 7 and 8, R43 is the...
Mr. Chair and members, this was originally a MnDOT agency provision that was in the governor's budget bill, if I remember correctly. And this would establish a threshold of $25,000, or lower, as what is considered a minimum damage acquisition. And it would permit for those types of acquisitions before eminent domain proceedings begin that the acquiring authority, so MnDOT, for instance, but not just MnDOT, would be able to produce a minimum damage acquisition report, and that would be instead of the usual appraisal process. So Section 7 contains the substantive language. The definition change on minimum damage acquisition can be found on R44, and that is 30.11 to 30.13. And then Section 8 goes along with it, and that's really more of a conforming change. That starts at 30.18.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Any questions from members?
So Mr. Chair, I didn't hear the first part of Mr. Burris's presentation, and I don't recall. Was this the Senate bill, or what was this, Ms. Abbott? This was in the governor's bill. Well, wow. Who stands with the governor and who doesn't here? Right. So that answers my next question, is how does MnDOT feel about it? I see a thumbs up from Mr. Rudin. Okay, thanks. That answers my question.
All right.
So, Mr. Chair, do you want to work through the whole list and then do like a global motion, or do you want to work through each item, move each item piece by piece?
Should we get them? And there's that section by section, or right. Go through the whole.
And I think.
Okay, we will. We'll. That was a very good suggestion, Mr. Chair. We'll just work through the list then. We'll work through both the House and Senate list. Next one would be the signal timing optimization for traffic signals, and that's R45 of the side-by-side.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just pause for a sec.
Yes.
I think we had discussed perhaps pausing on slurry study and the I-94 study, and then down on our list, we don't need to take up the flooding appropriation. That's going to be carried over in the tax bill.
Correct.
Right. Right. And then... we were willing to add to your side the environmental fund, the study of the PCA uses of the vehicle transfer fee in the environmental fund, if you wanted to add that and have a little discussion about that.
Absolutely. Great. Members, the list that you're working off of just was not updated as we were certainly working through this today. So that those are the... items that will be taken off, and the one addition will be the environmental fund, the PCA environmental fund. So that's what we'll be working through. The next one we'll move to is the R45 section 10.
Mr. Chairman, when you two guys talk to each other there, it's kind of hard to follow. So can somebody repeat over here whatever Mr. Burris or whatever you're going to do?
Sure, Representative Earhart. We're just discussing the list here that you have in front of us.
Yeah.
It was updated throughout the day here. So to a couple items to note, on the House side, we will be taking up the PCA environmental funding. And then we will not be discussing the concrete diamond slurry and the I-94 study. And then below on the Senate list, we will not be taking up the MnDOT flooding appropriation because that's handled in the Senate tax bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, so the next House only item is on page R45. It's section 10 on the House side. And this was another agency, MnDOT agency proposal as part of the governor's budget. And it would require development of an inventory by road authorities, so cities, counties, local units of government, on timing of traffic signals for some of their roadways. So there's a threshold. It's not all roads, but ones with a traffic daily count of 20,000 vehicles per day or higher, as well as all principal arterial roadways. And the local unit of government is then required to implement a timing optimization plan and reevaluate the timing at least once every 5 years under that plan. And compliance with the plan has to be certified and submitted to MnDOT. This language includes a couple of clarifications from the original governor's language.
Thank you. Questions?
And then finally, under the effective date, Mr. Chair and members, the initial inventory would be due by December 30 of 2015.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank MnDOT for this language and thank the committee for its consideration today. This is an extremely important issue in my district, Highway 65, running through Blaine. We have a mess right there, just a massive amount of traffic that goes through there, and accidents with people running red lights to try and not sit at a light for 3 or 4 minutes. It's a really, really big deal. So appreciate this being considered today, and really urge that this specifically that they took a look at Highway 65.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we actually didn't take this up at all, so we didn't even air it out. Can you tell me, in your hearing this matter, did the local units have any opinion about undertaking this activity with respect to time and effort and all of that?
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, Lisa, my area, the local governments are all in on this. This would be a great help in our community.
Great. Mr. Chair, did the League of Minnesota Cities or counties or anyone weigh in? I just don't know.
Sure.
It's a sincere question. It's a good idea, I think, but just curious about that implication.
Yeah. Well, another department did.
Representative Sanders, did you have anyone from the...
Yeah, or maybe MnDOT can help us understand if this was developed in consultation with the locals?
Oh. Mr. Peterson, if you'd like to talk from the department's perspective. Representative Howell, he's coming down. Do you have a question?
Well, I've got an email from my county, and they are concerned about, you know, how it there's no definition of communications in there. What defines communications? Who defines what that is, and who defines what optimization is? I mean, what's optimum for the people on one street is probably on a side street not too optimum, and it might tie them up. So there's some questions on how that's evaluated and who actually takes control of that. So those are the questions out there. I don't know if Mr. Peterson can help us identify or clarify that.
Oh, I believe we have the correct person here then. Mr. Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. At the request of the governor, MnDOT prepared this proposal. Our state aid division did consult with city and county engineers in order to put the parameters into the proposal, the traffic volumes and the time, the frequency of the reporting and those kinds of things. And so I wouldn't say that there was a broad-based input from interested people across the state who are involved in these kinds of things. But I do think that optimization has a generally accepted meaning, which is that you want to minimize the total amount of time that people spend at traffic lights. And so when you have, for example, if you have a sequence of traffic signals that control the traffic along a corridor, you only want people to stop once. And then once they get through a green, that they continue as long as they can to continue to hit greens as long as they proceed at the prescribed speed limit, for example. And so, and then with an optimization, then you evaluate the total delay of all the people that go through an intersection and optimize it for the peak flow, basically, because that's when you minimize that wait time. And so, you know, I don't know this particular concern of the person that Representative Howe referenced, but then this last line on 31.19 where it references this annual maintenance expenditure report. So this is a requirement currently for people who to receive state aid distribution. So it's a report that they currently file, and so our intent is to integrate this particular requirement into that already established process.
Thank you, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Isn't this language for the entire state? Is it only for the trunk highway system, or is it for every county, municipality, and so forth?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Earhart, this would be for all roads in the state of Minnesota that have traffic greater than 20,000 vehicles a day, which is a reasonably high volume on a non-interstate type road.
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I think in the metro area, there's a lot of places that have 20,000 a day going by. Am I right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, yeah, I don't know how many there are, but yeah, there's, you know, typically this would be a, if it was not access protected or access controlled, this would be a four-lane street, or, you know, a street that would require four lanes to carry that amount of traffic reasonably.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the cities in my district is Woodbury, a growing city with exactly the types of roadways you're talking about, and I know that they are routinely working on these issues of optimization and timing and that kind of thing. I would just be concerned that that this work effectively with plans that they're already doing, that we're not placing an undue burden in terms of reporting and duplication of efforts and timing of work that they're already doing. That would be my only question and concern, is that when you think about cities like that and the efforts they're already making, that we're not double efforts, that kind of thing.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kemp, the requirement is for the road authority to develop and implement a signal optimization plan, so it's not to supplant any plans that may already exist. So I don't think that it would interfere with what a community or a road authority already has planned for their roads. And just one thing I should mention too, but this type of investment by road authorities in improving the traffic flow has a return on investment that's, I want to say it's like 75, I don't know exact numbers, but it's very, very high. It's like the most cost-effective thing we can do to preserve mobility in these corridors. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Peterson, isn't it would be accurate to say that most of the stoplights are actually owned by the state, by MnDOT, as opposed to the local municipalities?
Mr. Chairman, not necessarily. MnDOT already does this work routinely on our trunk highway system where we have stoplights. So this would be, it could be where there's a an intersection with a local road, but my understanding is that this would apply primarily to intersections that are of roads owned by cities and counties, so they would be owned by those road authorities.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from members?
Mr. Chair, I just see local representatives of the local government. It's not enough columns to hide behind in this room. Not like room 15 over at the Capitol.
Right. Welcome to the committee. State
thank your name you. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. We don't have a position on this provision. We have briefed our city engineers on the language, and we had a real mixed reaction. We have some folks that think that it implies they're doing something wrong. We have folks who think it might be somewhat of a burden, and then we have others that are doing it already. To complement the agency, MnDOT State Aid was at the meeting where folks were briefed and I think heard the concerns. I would just ask that if this moves ahead that the department provide resources when they're necessary to help the locals comply, meaning maybe technical resources or other kinds of assistance that can help the locals meet the technical demands of doing this.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I have a suggestion. I mean, I know we're not taking motions now, but for future, for some point in the future, not today, I would suggest that we adopt this provision, but then before we close up the conference committee report, maybe we get some language of the type that Ms. Finn just described included.
So noted.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you both for your testimony. All right. Mr. Burris, Section 11, road access for field application of manure.
Mr. Chair and members, this provision is the next one on the same R45. That's Section 11 on the house side. And this would establish a temporary permit for up to 14 days for use of the right-of-way of a road. And it's, again, it refers to road authorities, so that could be a county or a city or MnDOT. And it would allow placement of a pressurized flexible force main, which I basically take to mean a pipe, that would run along a roadway and would be used for pumping manure from a pumping location out to a field. And the permit language sets out some requirements of what the property owner or the occupant of the property who's seeking the permit would, how the force main would need to be placed, where the pumping equipment would need to go, and meeting other requirements that the road authority might establish as part of issuance of the permit. And it also provides in paragraph C for the force main piping to extend along the right-of-way that's adjacent to the property owned by the permit applicant. So it could be sort of non-contiguous between the starting point and the field.
Thank you, Mr. Burris.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, then, just by way of background, this was originally a provision that Representative Torkelson had carried in House File 1415.
Thank you.
Chair, who buttonholed me when I was over visiting the House floor today.
Yeah.
On this particular, the only thing he cares about, this is his re-election bill. So basically, if I understand this correctly, this allows application to be made by pipe instead of being trucked over to the field.
Correct.
Is that the gist?
Correct.
All right.
And temporarily, as stated, the 14-day time period, certainly just allowing our agricultural community to be more efficient and allow for that flexibility.
It's not going to interfere with habitat and ditches and screw up the pollinators and the wild birds, and I'm sure not.
I would have to say no.
We're chumpy about ditches these days.
I would also comment it is also a benefit to the road system as well, because those heavier big machines going in and around from the roads back and forth do carry a lot of weight on the road too, so mm-hmm. It actually takes some of that weight off of those particular roads it as well, which are generally township and other smaller roads too.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from members? Okay, thank you. When we move to the Otter Tail County Turnback, Section 57, R128 in your side-by-side. First.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a turnback kind of similar to one that the conference committee had previously adopted. It's on page R128. at the bottom. It's section 57 on the house side. And this would be a transfer of jurisdiction to the Otter Tail County, to the county of Trunk Highway segment located in Otter Tail County. And this was originally a Representative Nornes provision, House File 1827.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure how we did, how we failed to pick this one up. Do we know?
Right. Fine. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, pretty straightforward on this one as a turn back. That's the MPCA. Okay. We'll move back to the one that's not on your list, members, is the Section 62 R130. That is the environmental fund, the PCA.
Huh? Oh, yes. I guess we didn't get a hearing request on that. Yeah. Okay, so, oh, the next page.
Correct. R130, Section 62.
Mr. Chair and members, this provision would require the Pollution Control Agency to provide a legislative report by November 1st of this year, and this would be on a title transfer fee and the uses of those funds, the amount of revenue, kind of the policy rationale behind it, and where the dollars have gone. This is a fee. I believe the amount is $10 on each motor vehicle title transfer, and the fee is actually located in Chapter 115A. It's outside of most of the fee setting provisions normally in the transportation chapters, like Chapter 168, and it's essentially the dollars are administered on the Pollution Control Agency side of the ledger, if you will.
Thank you. Questions from members? All right, thank you. Move on to Section 64. Those are the Capital Complex Interagency Agreements. Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, Section 64 is a repealer, and this would have the effect of eliminating interagency agreements in among tenants paying for a portion of the costs of capital security in the capital complex area. So what's not identified in the repealer itself but is kind of implicit is that the costs that are currently or funding stream that currently goes to the department through the interagency agreements would be kind of backfilled through something like a direct appropriation.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Not sure why we didn't pick up this particular repealer, but as members are probably aware, this is an initiative that comes out of the, what do we call it, the Capital Security Task Force? Yeah, Capital, on which I serve. And the idea behind it is that we would, for the Capitol campus, all the buildings on the campus for which State Patrol provides security, we would move from a building to building, agency to agency, individualized contract form of service, because what happens in that instance is various agencies make different kinds of decisions about the kinds of security they want. So it's very, very consistent across the campus, even floor to floor in the buildings. And so there's just no uniform level of, you know, personnel presence or hardware features or protocol, all that stuff. And so there would be just all these little individualized contracts would be eliminated. We would just do a general fund appropriation. State Patrol would provide security on a uniform basis as they see fit to all the buildings. It does presume, so I don't know if, you know, we can do this, but it does presume that we're going to pick up the general fund element once we get targets and are able to spend money. So this policy piece is pretty linked to kind of that budget decision.
Any other questions from members? Comments? All right, that would complete the House-only provisions. We'll move on to the Senate-only provisions. And we'll start with Section 7, R-59, recreational vehicles, the three-year registration period. Ms. Borzovsky, would you like to speak to that?
Mr. Chair and members, the first provision on R-59, Section 7, and that allows owners of towed recreational vehicles to register their vehicles, renew registration either annually as currently provided or every 3 years. And if the every 3 year option is exercised, then the full 3 year registration fee is paid all at once and also three times the normal filing fee. Should I continue or any discussion?
Yeah,
okay. Then the second provision is conditional registration filing fee on R-79, Section 31. And this provides that when that a conditional vehicle registration that a motor vehicle dealer who is filing a conditional registration must pay a $10 filing fee and another $10 fee when the conditional registration is cleared. That's considered a separate transaction requiring a separate $10 fee. Then the next one is in two different sections and on pages R-77 and 79. And actually the R-77 one is a little bit difficult technically to adopt it should the committee decide to act on it. And so on on line 53.34, it provides that a $10 filing fee has to be paid for a motor carrier fuel license. And actually the word tax is extraneous there. Should really be deleted. The proceeds of this fee would go to the vehicle services operating account. And the reason it's just a little bit difficult technically is because it's cross-referenced in Section 28 on R-76 because, as you see, there's a back down on 53.31, there's also a $10 surcharge imposed in this same section, which is a totally different initiative. So the numbering has been changed, and there's a cross-reference issue with the previous section. So I guess if the committee decides to act on it, probably just make a note to let the staff work out the technical issues on that. And then on R-79, there is at 77.20 a $100 reinstatement fee to reinstate a revoked IFTA license. The next item is on R-83, and that is a provision in Section 8 that requires an owner of a vehicle who is registering or renewing registering or transferring ownership to provide information to the registrar to show the existence of motor vehicle insurance, and it details the specific information that has to be provided. This takes effect on January 1, 2016. The next item on R-101 expands the purposes for which the Mercy Fund can be utilized, and that is the Rail Service Improvement account, actually. And at 88.32, you'll see the new language that allows capital improvement projects to be at least partially funded out of Mercy if they are designed to improve capacity or safety at rail yards. Mr. Chair, I believe we're skipping over the next one, the flooding appropriation extension.
Correct.
Okay. So then the next item would be on R-141. And that it starts at the very last line. That's the head note, and then The language is on the next page. And this requires the Met Council to provide regular route transit service to Hastings if Hastings enters the transit taxing district by July 1, 2015. And finally, there is at the bottom of R-143, Section 32, a required report to be submitted by the Commissioner of Management and Budget to the Transportation Finance Leadership in the Legislature that would detail expenditures and transfers from the dedicated highway funds, the Trunk Highway Fund and the Highway User Fund, for 2010 to 2015 and also include information on the purpose of the expenditures.
And Mr. Chair?
And Mr. Chair.
I met with representatives of MMB today, and they would advise that rather than the Commissioner of Management and Budget develop this report, that we ask that a report to be developed by the Commissioners of Transportation and Public Safety with support from Management and Budget. Management and Budget more kind of keeps track of the transactions, but kind of the underlying information we're trying to get to, they don't really maintain that information. And so when it comes time, I would make a motion to amend in that way. I don't know if transportation is chuckling. I think that's hilarious.
Okay.
I'm more focused on I know you've got a number of initiatives around how those funds are used in DOT. I tend to get a little more anxious about how the dedicated, constitutionally dedicated funds are used over on the public safety side.
Okay, so that would, your suggestion would be to insert the Commissioners of Transportation and Public Safety in coordination with Management and Budget?
Correct, yeah. And we'll have Ms. Verzovsky will dream up some fancy tighter language than that at some point.
All right.
And then I was going to say something else about one of the other things. Oh, yeah, when we do the IFTA thing, yeah, we'll just, maybe we can just, yeah, give just generalized direction to staff, because one of the initiatives contained in that section has to do with the small cities, you know, one of the major fiscal initiatives that we have on our side to raise money for the small and large cities through an additional $10 on one of these vehicle transactions. So we'll have to take that out for the time being if we adopt the IFTA filing and reinstatement fee section. It's all in the same section.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Perzovsky. BAT members, I guess we will move maybe some help from Mr. Burris or staff on the correct motion. Then should I list through the sections that we've approved, or what is the actual format here?
Mr. Chair and members of the conference committee, if the conference committee and you are comfortable, we have the list, and you've identified technical cleanup as well as a change on the reporting side. And then the other thing that we have that would be a change just from adopting the list is on the R-77 section 29, only adopting the motor carrier fuel tax language, kind of that sentence, and not yet adopting an additional $10 surcharge. So with that understanding, Mr. Chair, if you wanted to just move the list, I think we would be comfortable with being able to identify what the committee goal is.
Right. Ms. Berzovsky, do you have any other comments in that regard?
No, Mr. Chair, except just to note the items that were removed from the list in today's consideration.
Okay.
And then the understanding that we're going to come back and at some point in the future to do a little consideration for local units and the traffic signal timing optimization. And then if we decide that the capital complex issue is not worthy of funding, we'll have to revisit that. But I suspect we'll adopt that in the final report anyway. So I'm comfortable with adopting that right now.
All right. Thank you for all of that input. Pardon me?
Mr. Chair, members. I'm Judd Shetton with the Metropolitan Council, and I have just have a quick question. I apologize. I was talking with Ms. Venowitz up here related to the provision on the Metro Transit service to Hastings, and that we were hoping that if that position was going to be moved, it'd be in the context of some funding similar to where the governor's bill or where the Senate bill is. Otherwise, we would like to have a little bit broader conversation about that until we get a target for the committee. So I just wanted to point that out. I wasn't sure if we're going to move everything or not. So we certainly support adding service to Hastings, but we also want to make sure that we are able to maintain the service that we have today.
Mr. Chair, since that was in the Senate only, do you have comments?
I don't know. I'm a little bit conflicted. That was not the understanding. I thought this was, this is the first time hearing of that. We took that into the Senate side, not in that context, okay. and in that light. But as a product of conversations that the officials in Hastings, as well as the senator. I think actually you're representative.
I would imagine, yes.
Of this idea that they were going to come to an agreement. So why don't we do this? Similar to the capital complex agreement, which would presuppose a decision being made on the budget, and we'll just kind of consider the Hastings change in that same light, that if everything goes to heck, we'll revisit those two items before we close up the report and let's adopt this today.
All right. I think that's all right. Fair in that regard. Any clarification or comments from members? Okay. All right. Does everyone understand the motion? Okay. Then all those in favor of the proposed motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Those sections are adopted. Thank you, members and members of the audience today. We appreciate your indulgence as we move forward through here. We are still looking very forward to receiving our targets so that we can complete a very good transportation policy bill and finance bill. Mr. Chair, do you have any other comments today?
No, Mr. Other than I echo your sentiments. We did some good work yesterday on the public-private partnerships piece. I know Ms. Berezovsky is slaving away over language today, so maybe we'll have something to take a look at on that in more detail tomorrow.
Fantastic.
No, we did not.
With that, this meeting is adjourned.